and welcome to We Are Marvel, where we explore all the corners of the Marvel Cinematic Multiverse. And we are the official podcast of the We Are Marvel Facebook group. Go give them a follow, and while you're there, go check out our page, We Are Marvel Pod. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Jeremy.
I'm your other host. My name is Justin.
And we are joined once again by our good friend, Dr. Joe Mayer. And I'm again already questioning myself if I said it right or not.
Meyer.
Meyer. As soon as I loser. Said it, I... Fred Meyer. And I think I say this every time. It's like Fred Meyer.
It's become, yeah, it's, you get so nervous now that you're
I do. And I was almost, contemplating calling you professor and not doctor. Just because, you know, X2, Professor fine. X, all that. But
yeah. True.
Yeah.
And let's call you Dr. Joe. I mean, I think Dr. Joe sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Starting over and hello and welcome. No. I should just stick with Dr. Joe. I don't know why I put myself in this position. But anyways, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it as usual. We're so glad to get you back. Because we did have you on for the first X-Men, right?
That's right.
Yes. And so we did talk about maybe having you on for this, and we were glad that it worked out and we got to do it. So, yes, we are excited.
Woot.
Woot indeed.
That's all I got. Sorry. No, this is awesome. I always love having you on. We have a lot of fun. And
yeah.
I'm excited to talk more mutants because this, to me, is, aside from First Class maybe, is really the best of the X-Men films.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm throwing that out there. Do with it as you will. But just watching that White House scene at the beginning earlier today, man. I was just like, this is so fucking cool.
It is. Yeah. It looks great. Like, I did not remember how good it looked. Because they, I think it starts at the very beginning with, like, I don't know what it's supposed to be, like maybe brain.
Yeah, the atoms or something. And shit.
Whatever that is. That looked terrible. So I was like, oh, yep. I remember when this movie is made back in early 2000s. And then you get that scene, and it's like, whoa, that is completely different than what we just saw. So you're right. It was great.
Yeah, I agree. Seeing Nightcrawler on the screen right away, that was perfect.
Yeah.
Best choice they made right there.
Yes, absolutely. For sure.
And he's such a cool character. Even outside of this, he's just one of those more interesting of the X-Men characters to draw from. The only thing I think that would have made this better for me, and I think also a little for the story, is if Beast had actually been in the movie. Like, I know there was a cameo of Hank McCoy, which doesn't make sense anymore, given the, you know, of everything. But, like most X-Men canon, doesn't make sense. But I love Beast. I have a Beast section on my desk that I'd show you if it wouldn't, you know, blur you guys out. But, like, I think just given the politics of this movie, Beast would have been a perfect fit.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree.
Good.
All right. Well, we are going to, let's jump into
Leave him on a high. We're done.
Yeah. Thanks for joining. No, let's jump into this. So grab your Icarus and let's start talking about X2. Is it just X2 or is it X2, X-Men United?
X-Men United.
Okay, because I've also found it as just United. X2.
Well, those people are losers, and they're wrong.
Jeez.
What's... Yeah, I don't like the whole... Yeah, it's fine.
I might leave all this in. I don't know yet.
We'll see. I would. Would.
When anti-mutant Colonel William Stryker kidnaps Professor X and attacks his school, the X-Men must ally with their arch-enemy Magneto to stop him.
Just in time for Xmas.
Oh, no.
Nice.
X-Jet. Yeah. We get a lot of a very Batman-y feel.
Yeah.
Yes, X-Men, X-School, I'm sure, X-Jet, X-everything.
I was making fun of you.
How dare you? I can't believe you would do that.
But it's fun.
I hate you. It was directed by Bryan Singer, written by Zach Penn, David Hayter, and Bryan Singer, and is based on X-Men by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. It is starring Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman, Ian McKellen, Halle Berry, Famke Janssen, James Marsden, Rebecca Romijn Stamos, Brian Cox, Alan Cumming, Bruce Davison, and Anna Paquin. I had a budget of, I have between 110 and 125 million. I'm not sure what the difference is, maybe tax stuff. And it got a box office of 407.7 million.
That's right. Bad.
That's good.
Yeah. I mean, especially for the time. Yeah. I mean, this was before, aside from like Spider-Man, it's before these movies were just crushing the box office every couple months. So. Yeah. It was enough to do a third one, unfortunately, and kind of good.
Oh, yeah. No.
Not only a third one, but talks of spinoff ones and origins. And I will say, at the time, I was like, yes, I would love that. And then we got X-Men Origin Wolverine, and I was like, that's okay. We don't need these.
Never mind. You don't need more.
Yeah, I was wrong.
And X3, which was pretty rough.
Bad.
Yeah.
We'll have you on for that one too if you want.
Yes.
Come on back. X-Men.
The trilogy within the trilogy. Yes.
We are the juggernaut, bitch. I mean, come on. That's
the groans in the movie theater when he said that. The groans.
Oh, man. They're probably just expecting, like, the audience is going to love this.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it was based on like a YouTube video or something that was going around that time. Yeah.
Oh.
I think and it was like it had X-Men, the animated series, and Juggernaut, and someone had made some dumbass song or whatever, and it said, "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch," and that's what it's based on. If I remember, geez. I could be wrong, but that's what I remember from back.
I don't know if I want you to be wrong or not.
Yeah. That would actually explain a lot. It would explain if that's the truth.
Yeah, it doesn't make it better or anything, but it explains it.
No, but you guys talk, and I'll see if I can find it.
All right, yeah. Well, I before we get into the more specifics of it, I kind of want to get your overall thoughts on the movie. So, Joe, we'll start with him. I should start with Justin. Put him right on the spot. But no, Joe, let's start with you.
I love it.
Yeah, so my thoughts are this. When I decided, all right, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to rewatch this film for the podcast, I was reluctant because my initial memory, and my memory, you know, memories can betray you sometimes, they can. I remember thinking, I didn't really like this one. You know, I was kind of let down. But then when I sat through it, I was actually pretty engaged by it. You know, from the beginning, you mentioned the awesome Nightcrawler scene, which still holds up. I mean, I do now remember enjoying seeing Nightcrawler on the screen in the movie theater. And just because I've always been fascinated by him. I love the religious aspect of his character, which I think gives him incredible depth as a figure, something very different from the other characters. And so I found myself by the end, I mean, with some cringy moments here and there, which are to be expected, I enjoyed it. I just turned my brain off and I enjoyed it. And there are definitely a couple of scenes which, you know, we can talk about things that were, I thought, improvements on the first one quite a bit, actually.
I found a thing.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So, and this is from knowyourmeme.com. So I want to get that out there.
Great spot.
It says, "I'm the Juggernaut, bitch" refers to a catchphrase associated with the Marvel Comics character, the Juggernaut from X-Men. The phrase originally stems from a parody dub video of the 92 X-Men animated series that was created in 2005 by Randy Hayes and Xavier Nozero of My Way Entertainment.
Okay.
Wow.
Good find. Yeah, it still
doesn't
help a
lot of random factoids in this brain. None of them are useful.
But you know what, though? I really do find that interesting, and I'll tell you why. Because that line, it just stands out so awkwardly in that film.
Yeah.
Like, it's so undeniably bad that at least having this explanation that it was a joke that just went over everyone's head. Like 99% of the audience's head, this went over at the time. That wouldn't happen today, though, because we have so much more exposure to memes and things all the time now.
Right.
That,
although I do groan every time Tony Stark mentions the MySpace page. Go, MySpace.
was the thing.
Yes, it was. You know, yeah. How many things could you get up on your MySpace page, and the music mm-hmm. that you had in the background running in a loop yeah. constantly, the MIDI file that just kept going. Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Your top
get some eight. Three doors down.
Yeah. And whoa, hey, I saw you took me on your top eight. What's with that, man? Yeah,
what'd I do? Yeah. What happened? I mean, now you got Tom on there. Oh, that's man. A given, but he's your number one, but
terrible. Oh, man. Oh,
good
All
stuff.
All right, Justin, what about you? What are your kind of overall thoughts on the movie?
I love this movie. Like, it is one of those classic comic book movies of old. I mean, just watching it earlier today, I was just like remembering all the great things and the great story. Yeah, it's dated. It's 2003. Still a lot of leather. But to me, it stands with the Superman, the movies, and, you know, the classic, the first Iron Man. Like, there is a list of those kind of essential comic book movies. And I think of the X-Men movies, like, this and First Class are the top for me. And always yeah. will be. Until the MCU obviously does it better.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. They will reign supreme, I'm sure. Yeah. I felt the same way. I mean, I really enjoyed this movie. I came in kind of worried because I remember Daredevil being fine. I did not like it. If you want to listen to that, go listen to that. I had a good time. Justin didn't. And so I was slightly worried about this. But I was like, I remember liking this, though. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff in this one. Mm. And rewatching, it was, in fact, yeah, it was the case. It was very cool, a lot of cool stuff. And like you said, Joe, it's got some cheesy kind of stuff in there. It will. I mean, once we move past all these other MCU movies and kind of rewatch them in, you know, 20 years, they'll probably also have some cheesy, cringy stuff. So I think that was fine. I think the biggest difference between this and Daredevil was the acting and maybe the amount of cheesiness of the actors. Because the Daredevil had a lot of that. You know, you got Bullseye whipping his overcoat wherever he had a chance to. With this, it was very grounded, and they tried to make everything like this is real and actually important. Not to say the Daredevil stuff wasn't, but they made you feel like in this world, this kind of stuff is important. And so I think they did a great job with that.
And, sorry, Jeremy, you and I have talked about the difference between a movie and a film. Daredevil's a movie. X2 is a film. Okay. Like, there's quality there. There's attention to detail there. There's a style. I mean, you look at a frame from X2 and compare it to a frame from Daredevil, which I do enjoy. It's like watching, I did Pod and Gore, which is a horror podcast. Like, I like some, not all, but some crappy movies, because that's kind of part and parcel with being a horror nerd, right? Is you have to like some garbage. And that's same with comic book movies, but X2 just feels like a well-crafted film. And what's funny is Daredevil was made by the same studio, Fox, and came out 2 months before this, February, May. So,
jeez.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen Daredevil, like a really long time. So I can't remember it like completely, but I will say that I think you're onto something with that film and movie reference, because this is, you can tell that there's quality control, there's thoughtfulness in X2, there's even, like I said, in my opinion, there are conscious changes that they made from the first movie to this one. Maybe I'll just mention one now, pacing. I thought the pacing in the first film was just a bit too slow. They were trying to have these cinematic moments in the first film that didn't quite pay off. And as a matter of fact, we talked about this with X-Men 1, with the first X-Men film. The biggest example is when Sabretooth makes the appearance with Wolverine in the car, and you have the car crash. And you can see the composition of the scene was set correctly. Like, there's this dimension where Sabretooth kind of looks bigger in the moment. There's going to be this big clash, and nothing happens. There's like no real payoff. But with this film, I felt like they moved up the pacing a little bit, made it a little bit quicker, and they started paying off on things that were in front of you. And that means to me that they really took their time and thought through the entire process of the film. Where do we need to go by the end? Where does every scene need to begin and end? And so I actually think you're right. I agree. There's a lot of thoughtfulness here.
which is such a shame when you get to the next one and there's not.
Oh, yeah, it's bad. But
we'll try and keep doing, you know, stop referencing what's there and, you know, focus on the here and now. But it's worth noting because, I mean, you look at the first one, it's like, that's a solid late 90s, early 2000s superhero movie. Mm-hmm. That looks like something that could come off the back of Batman Forever or the first Spider-Man, you know, that kind of era. And then you look at X2 and it's like, I could see X2 being made now. Maybe not being as good or received as well, but it's something that could fit in with like the 2008 Iron Man Dark Knight era. Then you go to X3 and it's like, that looks like crappy 90s.
Yeah.
Like Steel and Red Sonja and like some of the, you know, the garbage that we got back before these got good.
All right.
It's just crazy.
It is, yeah.
But we got Kelsey Grammer's Beast, so I'll take that.
I like, yeah, I kind of liked that, honestly. I like the
I love
the
Fraser.
The eloquence of Beast in that moment was, it brings you back, of course, the animated series and the eloquence that he had in that. So anyone who loved the animated series growing up, you were like, yeah, that's spot on.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I like the politics in this one, because that, to me, is, and even in the first one, that's what that show felt like. Yeah, sometimes it was a little dry and a little slow, but it was politically driven. It was driving home the point of, you know, the actual ramifications of mutants in society and how horrible people would be to them.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, and speaking of that, they paid things off in this one. It's the Angel, Ben Foster's Angel in X3, never paid off.
Right.
Like, I was so excited to see more with that, but
yeah, he got wings and then he screwed off and then he came back and did something and then he flew around in the park and that was
it. Yeah, and that was it. And yeah, it's back to that whole payoff thing. And it's so strange. It's like, this X2 was the middle. Like, you should have learned your lesson, which you did.
Yeah.
But then you forgot the lesson? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it seemed to me in this the other thing that stood out to me about this film that I thought was an improvement from the first one, and I like the first one, I do, is I felt like they were, I felt like the characters in the first film were a bit neutered in terms of their powers still. Like, I think, again, I talked about, even in the first time I was here with X-Men, that, like, Cyclops to me seemed, for like a lead character, seemed like pretty weak in so many different areas. At least in this film, he has an action sequence. You see him actually do something and you're like, okay, good. That's some, that shows you why, a little bit at least, why he might be a leader. But then, what they did well with that even is they showed you a lot of different characters in this one, Lady Deathstrike, and the powers, and they did a really good job of introducing figures in a way that made sense. Like, it made sense. Anyone who was on the screen, you thought, okay, this all works. They messed it up, I think, in the third one, because they were introducing characters that just kind of made you feel a little bit like it was like a Royal Rumble. You're like, and so-and-so is coming out the ring. And you're like, why? Like, what?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have that prison train jailbreak thing. That was a cool sequence, but it's like you get Mystique released, which makes sense, obviously, but then you get Multiple Man, who barely talks, and then you get the Juggernaut bitch, and then some other the Marrow, I think was his name, the dude with the bone shards that he threw, and all this other like faceless who gives a shit characters.
Exactly.
We're just there to fill space.
Yeah, and to make you think, oh wow, that's awesome. So and so is on the screen, and I know that character. And but there's, again, you're right. There's no payoff. Like, it's like they forgot that you have to pay these things off. There has to be a storyline somewhere.
And there's still a little bit of this, and I think like Colossus is the worst used character in X-Men history. Because he shows up and has this really cool scene in X2, and then he's gone. Then he shows up and he has a pretty cool scene in X3, and then he's gone. It's just like, I love this character. He's not super deep and interesting, I guess, but like, he's cool, and he's just never in these movies, and it always makes me sad.
Yeah, and they even have the scene where he's like, I can help.
Yes.
He's like yeah, nah, go help.
Go help. We don't have the budget for that, sorry.
Yeah. I'd be like, no,
we blew all the money in the White House scene.
We're about to die. You're with me.
No.
Kids can screw off. Like, come on. Fastball know, special, so come bad. On.
Yeah, I would have been like, I'm going to go help them. You go out front.
Take all the bullets and wipe them out. You're fine.
It's not going to hurt you. Man. You'll be okay.
I just have these like forks on my hands. Exactly. You got a whole...
It still hurts when I get shot in the head.
At least it wasn't an adamantium bullet and he forgot everybody.
Oh, geez.
Yes, it is good. All right, well, let's jump into this movie. I know we've gone off topic a little, but not too off topic, because it's still X-Men related.
It's in the realm.
Yes, but I'm going to jump back to the beginning, because I do have a question that I didn't really think of until I was making these notes. So we get the opening scene at the White House with Nightcrawler. It's awesome. We love it. It's great. And he's about to look, what looks like he's going to kill the president. And until he gets shot and he feels it enough where it almost wakes him up or whatever and he leaves. So was Stryker's plan to kill the president or not? Like this was what happened seemed to work exactly how he wanted, but
I think he would have been fine either way. Okay. Like if he had succeeded, that would have pissed the country off and he would have had the entire country backing him, whereas this just pissed the president off. And that was still enough for the president to go, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go break into this school.
He needs to create confusion and chaos in that moment.
And fear.
And fear. And that would have been accomplished either way.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I'll take that answer. I'll agree with you guys.
Check.
So if we want to jump around anywhere here, I just kind of have the notes in order. But if you guys want to talk about something else, then we'll do that. But until then, I'm just going to kind of fill space with kind of the next thing that's going on. So almost at the same time, it seems like we have Logan over at Alkali Lake, not Bay. Well, maybe it was. This is where his journey's led him. He thinks he's about to find something, goes in, and there's nothing there, which is, I understand we get there later, but it kind of seemed pointless at the time. If I was just watching this, it would feel pointless. Like, okay, we brought him here. There's nothing. What was the point of this? He's on this long journey to find something out, and he found nothing out. He just goes back to the school. I know it pays off later, but first time watching this, I mean, that's probably what I would be thinking.
Yeah, I thought it doesn't connect well if you really think on it about how the first film ended.
Right.
And how important it was for him to even have that lead and be able to go on that journey. And his level of anger and disappointment and stuff, it doesn't, if you think too hard about it, I think you're right. It doesn't quite work in that sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you saying his level of anger made me go, yeah, they should have had him be pissed.
Right.
Because I think it works in the sense of like, he went to discover something about his past, found nothing, and then his past found him.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't seem to care.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he was kind of like, oh, that sucked. That was a waste of a couple months. And a funny joke about me stealing Cyclops' motorcycle. And then we just move on with the next thing. Like, he should have been Wolverine. Like, even just one scene of him alone in his room throwing shit around.
Raging.
Or,
yeah,
raging. And just having, like, a hand knife berserker moment because he was so pissed. Or even at the base. Like, he should have just been like, there's nothing here, son of a bitch. Claws out, you know, slash some shit, maybe scared that stupid wolf away that didn't need to be there.
Stupid wolf.
And then he could have gone back and, you know, had been all calm, cool, collected back with Xavier.
Yeah.
But he didn't have him. He just looked at it and went, well,
Yeah, and that would have worked.
Gas money for nothing.
It would have worked in terms of continuity as well of the storyline from the first one. It would have given him a more space to grow in the second film, even, right? Because then you would realize, oh, he's still at that low place where he needs that answer, and that's all that matters. And that this, and then he can grow with his relationship with Rogue, which continues to grow, and all this stuff. So yeah, it shrunk a little bit his ability to grow in this film, just slightly, just a little bit.
Well, and it's funny, I mean, you think about the depth and complexity of characters in comic book movies, and before this, it didn't exist. Like, it was just, I'm sad because I don't have my hot girlfriend from next door, or because my bat nipples are chafing. Like, it's... I don't have my Batman credit card. This sucks. Like, this is the deepest comic book movie I think we'd had at this point, which is kind of scary.
You're probably right.
But yeah. It's that kind of next step to what we get in an Endgame, where you have a character sacrificing their life after 10 years of, you know, making cooler gadgets. It's insane. But when you look at it, that's what's tough with watching these old movies, is you actually go, oh, they're not that good. They're just better than what came before. It's almost like we're watching the evolution of quality in comic book film.
Yeah.
Starting with Howard the Duck, which is the
Howard
pinnacle.
The Duck. Oh, God.
And then it...
Oh, man. Oh, gosh, I hate it.
But let me ask you this, if you don't mind. Can I ask you, did you get like a kind of almost like a throwback weird feeling at the end, like, oh wow, this really could have kept ascending in a good way? Like, I remember thinking, sitting at the end of the film, you know, Jean does her thing and everything, and I remember thinking even the ending here was a bit better than I remembered, that people really should have been excited about what was to come based on that ending, and you know, that Dark Phoenix, you know, idea, that storyline. And it really is like, could it have risen to that level of let's say a pretty decent phase one MCU film at that? Could it have risen in that, you think?
I mean, X-Men is such a vast continuity. I mean, if you go into the comics, it's what kind of irritates me, about what they've done with Phoenix twice now, and will probably eventually do a third time, is, like, it's actually... It's an alien thing. Like, I'm not 100% on my X-Men here, but, like, it comes from space. It's an entity unto itself that inhabits and, like, infects Jean. So this idea of her being, you know, like, just an angry kid with a demon inside of her, you know. But I think that if X3 had paid off, and then the origin movies, because there's going to be a ton of them, if those had paid off, I think they could have built a huge universe with X-Men. Because, I mean, there's thousands of characters to explore that all could get their own movie. Jeremy's still waiting for Gambit.
I was just going to say, people were salivating for a Gambit film. Absolutely.
He's a cool character. He's very... I don't necessarily want it to be Channing Tatum, but it's an interesting idea. And if you go into the whole slavery side of it and have him be on Genosha, and like, if they'd really actually explored Sentinels anything other than a cameo at the beginning of X3 that doesn't make sense, and then later on in Days of Future Past, like, it's such a huge story. I mean, just look at the animated series. It went on for 5 years. I mean, there's so much you could do. That's why I'm excited for it in the MCU, because I think that that's what we're finally going to get, hopefully.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Next thing we got here is back at the school. Jean is having issues with her powers and is having visions of terrible things. Foreshadowing? Yes. Professor X uses the Cerebra. Autocorrect there.
Too.
To track down Nightcrawler. So he sends Jean and Storm off to get him. And then him and Cyclops go off to visit Magneto, leaving just Logan, who just got back. I guess, you know, great timing, Logan. Glad you didn't find anything.
We needed a babysitter.
Came back. So he leaves him alone with the children, and this is when we get the attack by Stryker and his goons.
I bet Xavier knew there was nothing there, and he was just like, he's going to be so pissed, he's going to come straight back here, and we're going to make him be our babysitter.
Yeah.
Stupid He'll dick.
Come back just in time. Isn't what? Yes. I mean, it worked out perfect. What was their plan if he didn't get back? I don't know. I guess maybe
Colossus.
Go stupid alone. Kids could fend for themselves.
Yeah.
I can help. No, you can't.
He just fails miserably.
Get in the wall.
Yeah. I'm still a little sour about that. I mean, not too much, but like, seeing it again, I remember, like, I want to see more of him.
Yeah.
Like, he looked cool, and I don't think the actor, I don't know what the actor has done since, but it's just like, man, you got huge for that role, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And you got nothing out of it. I feel bad.
Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that the attack stuff was very cool. It was cool seeing some of the kids' powers. The screaming one, not a big fan, but I mean, it really served loud. A purpose. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's that classic, because I mean, if you notice, she has red hair. So that means it was kind of Banshee, maybe, if you read the comics but don't care enough to know that that's not what Banshee should be. That's Banshee.
Sure.
Right.
Classic X-Men movie.
Yeah, that's fair. And I loved seeing Wolverine, like, kind of hearing something. And one of my favorite parts of this movie is, I think it's when the guy comes into the kitchen, the very first one. He, like, just puts the claws into him, just that, like, unhuman animal-like scream that he does. Like, it was like, that is Cyclops. Like, I love, we had a lot of that in Logan, Wolverine. Which I loved. Yes, Wolverine, Cyclops.
When Cyclops just goes nuts and wipes everyone out with his eye beams,
he's still kind of weak in this film, though.
He is.
Yes, he was.
They still can't get him right. They just can't.
No. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I was thinking about this earlier. Like, Cyclops is like Captain America with a bit of an attitude problem.
Yeah.
And this Cyclops, as much as I like James Marsden, I just watched Superman Returns a couple weeks ago because I've been on a big Superman kick, and like, he does fine in that, but like, he's a good actor. He's great in Westworld and other stuff, but he's just such a weenie in the X-Men movies compared to who Scott Summers should be.
Yeah. Yeah. There, he needs more anger. He does. And he needs, especially this, even I made a mental note of this too, because when he's talking to Xavier at the end, you know, he's talking to Jean through Professor X. I even remember thinking, come on, man, you got to put up more of a fight. Come on, what are you doing? You got to put up more of a fight than this. Instead, he's just like, please, no. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? Come on.
There's only something else I could do.
You should be trying to take out half of them already.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And that's when you look at the animated series, I mean, that's what he is.
Yeah.
He is that person who gets angry and acts, and people have to hold him back. Like, there are moments in the cartoon where even Wolverine is like, settle down a little bit, because you're going off the rails here. And that's not what this Cyclops is. This Cyclops, I don't even see him as a leader, and he just seems like he's just there.
Yeah.
Like, we're told he's a leader and all that, but he's not showing it.
Nothing, yeah. Yeah.
And part of it is Fox going, oh, everyone liked Hugh Jackman, and he's a big deal now. Well, he's the star.
Right.
Which I think was a mistake, honestly. As great as Hugh Jackman is in everything, they focus so much. It's like Jennifer Lawrence in the prequel movies. Like, yeah, she's great, but that's not what this is about. This is about this team, and they just can't seem to get that right.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
So then we get Logan confronting Stryker, who addresses him as Wolverine and seems to know about his past.
Twist.
Interesting, yes. So while this is going on, Stryker's assistant Yuriko Oyama captures Cyclops and Professor Xavier. Again, going back to that, Cyclops didn't do much. Like, he blasted her, and she just got up a little bit later. No damage done whatsoever. Like, I would have loved to have seen at least, like, her clothes torn or something. At least, like, a little
burn mark. She's a regenerative mutant. You'd think they could have at least showed a burn mark and her skin healed.
Yeah, but it was like she just
I was wondering, what do you guys think of the fact that they yet again, and will again for the third one, take Xavier off the board? And this is something they do in the comics and cartoons all the time, too, but
I guess for this one, they had a decent reason where they needed to capture him to do the ultimate plan that they had planned. So I guess I can see that, but I didn't even put it together until you just said that. But yeah, they just took him out again right away.
I didn't think about it either until just now. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, and they do it in the cartoons all the time too, but it's just like he's so ultra powerful. It's the Superman problem. Like, he's so powerful, we have to take him off the board so that these other characters can do stuff. Otherwise, it's why doesn't Xavier just fix this?
Yeah,
but it's interesting because you really are you're opening this up for me now, and the difference to me with the cartoon is you always got the sense that there was this part of Xavier that was like, I'm going to allow you to take me off the board. Huh. Right? Like he could, you always got this, had this feeling like if he really wanted to, he could just basically destroy everything around him and just leave. Just leave, right. Like, you know, but instead he was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to instead be in control, which was a big part of the whole school and everything, is learn how to control your powers, learn how to be more than just the powers even. And in the films though, you're right. You get a little bit of a sense that he is sort of just taken out a little bit too easily.
Yeah. In the third one, he just dies.
Oh, like, yeah.
He gets lifted up and ripped apart in that kitchen.
Yeah. And then, actually, again, he's taken out very quickly in Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's,
like, so,
then again in Logan. I mean, as wonderful as that whole thing was, like, he's killed there, too.
Jeez.
And they do a better job in the First Class, because one, it's tough because you tee him up as so powerful,
mm-hmm,
that you do have that issue of like, well, why doesn't he just fix it? It's fine. And then you almost write yourself into a conundrum of like, well, yeah, he could though. So let's just take him off the board. I think you could almost do like, I don't know, it's tough. Almost like he wants his team to shine. Like, yeah, like you were saying, like, yeah, I could do this, but I'm not going to because I need these other people to be the next generation of mutants for when I'm gone, to be able to do the kind of things that I can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be great to have a scene that says that. Because, yeah, that would make obviously sense. Yeah. Because, I mean, he's building this team and this group, this school, everything for that reason, I'm sure. But, yeah, we don't ever find that out. Like, we're having to find this out on this podcast right now. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's... Yeah, because like you said, they bring him in. The first thing we see with him is he freezes an entire museum. Yeah. And it's like, okay, you can do that? Like, mm-hmm, that's amazing.
And later he does it at an airport in one of the Wolverine movies.
Right.
Right.
So you're right. They show these huge powers, amazing powers that he has. And yeah, it's like, well, why doesn't he just do that again? He did it earlier for any other issue that they get themselves into. These goons showing up. Oh, hey, why doesn't he just stop them with his power again? I mean, he wasn't there, but you guys get the idea. You're right.
Yeah, and
well, I mean, even in the prison, like, yeah, they gas the cube thing or whatever, so he can't, I guess, even though he just did it 10 minutes ago in the movie, but...
Yeah, and sticking with your Superman theme here a little bit too, right? They address it in either Justice League or Justice League Unlimited. I think they talk about it where Superman admits... every battle that we go into, he has a kind of guilt because he kind of knows he's going to walk out of it, but everyone else might not. And so you wonder if you could play, does Xavier have that little bit of level of guilt that he walks into, that he strolls into, rolls into.
He glides, rolls.
You know, like if they're dying.
His present
does he feel, would he feel that level of guilt that, yeah, I could have stopped time. I could have done something and I didn't. I let it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's so, kind of so nice about the First Class averse is that he's a little depowered. He still stops people and, you know, does a lot of crazy shit, but he seems to have limits. Whereas as wonderful and perfect as Patrick Stewart is, because he is Xavier in every sense of the word, he's just so powerful compared to McAvoy that you can't.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, now we get to talk about Iceman's terrible family. Ugh, they're such bad people. They are.
You're the worst, and I'm glad your house burned down.
Kind of. I think the house ended up being fine. But yeah, they were just... everything about them was just mean and rude and so not non-understanding. And the brother just calling 911 and just lying. And it's just like, man. I mean, I know it's just to get to where we need to get. But still, like, it's strange that a family would be that bad. And actually, there is a reason that they kind of shot the scene the way it is, which we'll get into in some fun facts. But
that sounds cool. Yeah, I mean, it fits with the theme of X-Men, which is about prejudice, and mm-hmm. I mean the allegory, the different things you can compare to that scene in being a different race or a different gender, a different sexual identity, whatever. Like when she says, "Have you tried not being a mutant?"
Yeah.
Like, that is so straight out of someone saying, have you tried to not, you know, be homosexual or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like, it so perfectly fits that stereotype of that kind of horrible bigot.
Yeah.
That it's horrible to watch, especially nowadays, but it is the point.
Right. Which, actually, yeah, I'll just say what the fun fact is. It's Sir Ian McKellen worked with the screenwriters to make the scene in which Bobby Drake tells his parents he is a mutant to look more like a common gay coming out scene, which is exactly what, like you're saying, exactly how it felt. Yeah, it just, yeah, especially with the have you tried not, it's like, it doesn't work that way.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they did a good job of doing that. I think that was a great call to ask him to help out with that. And, and they did a good job of showing that family as being the bad side of humans, where they just don't understand. They can't just be okay with it. They don't understand it. So they did a good job with that, and I'll give them credit for that.
To me, though, it's still, I mean, it reads perfectly fine the way they did it. So I'm nitpicking mm-hmm. here, but yeah.
It's what we're here for.
Yeah, I mean, you already have that storyline built into this well. Right? The bigotry and all that stuff. And there's so many other places that you can explore that throughout the films. It brings to mind, it's the first episode, right, of the animated series with Jubilee, where isn't that where the family calls the registration or calls someone, right? But if they do so.
It's been a while, but yeah.
They do so because they think they're helping her. Mm-hmm. Like there's this kind of sense of, we're stuck, we're out of our element here as a family, and I love my child so much, I'm going to try to trust an authority, you know, entity to help. To me, that would have fit that area really well, because again, you just try to find these places where you can add additional depth and complexity. You could see where a parent would just feel like, I have no idea what to do with this. No clue. And I love my child so much. If someone else can help them, I feel like I owe it to them to do that. And so I could see it going that way as well and still adding a pretty nice level of depth there. Because like I said, the bigotry part is, I mean, that's there. That's throughout the entire film, essentially. Right. But that's nitpicking. The scene is still fine the way it is.
Well, I think you're point is going back to what you were saying earlier about expanding this universe. If mm-hmm. you did it the way the animated series did it, well, yeah, I could be wrong about this, but they were turning Jubilee into the authorities who weren't there to help them. They were there to enslave them and have them work, I think it was Genosha or whatever, in those work camps with the power dampeners around their necks as a workforce.
Genosha,
experiment on them.
The Genosha episode was because they thought they were going to a place where mutants were accepted. I remember because I just rewatched it because I love that. I love the Genosha episode. Yeah, they all felt like this was a place where they accept mutants for who they are. They love them. And so Gambit, Jubilee, and some of them say, don't we just owe it to ourselves to at least try and go there? And then they get entrapped. I think her parents call to try to help her, Jubilee, and I always feel like that's it's something very sad and beautiful about that at the same time, that you could see that the parents are just like, we just don't know what to do. We don't know. But like I said, this is nitpicking talk stuff. The scene works in the film. It works just fine.
But that's, I guess my point is, like, if this was a wider universe, you could have it have that subtext of they want to help her, but their means of helping her isn't help. They're actually damning her to a much worse fate.
Now
because
I got you.
You could say, like, oh, they're reporting her to this authority that takes care of the mutant problem, quote unquote, and helps them. But what they actually do is take them to experiment on them and make them their slaves or their, you know, their unwilling army or whatever. Yeah. Like, you could, I could see them doing that in the MCU, whereas in this, it's such a narrow scope of where, how wide the story's going to go that they wouldn't even bother.
That's a good point. Yeah, you can't explore it in sufficient depth, I think, with this amount of time and with this shrunken, it's not even a universe. It wasn't really a universe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a film franchise. Whereas, and that's my, was my point. Like, it could have been.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
what's so irritating. Like, after X2, and if they'd had the kind of, I think if these X-Men movies had come out post-MCU, even though some did, and it still didn't happen, you could have had that layered groundwork to be like, okay, we're going to start here, but what else is going on and would be going on in this universe where we could bring in Mr. Sinister and all these other interesting characters to really branch this out and show just how deep this problem could be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll never know.
Yeah, I will.
No.
Next thing we got here is the X-Jet is attacked by fighter jets while flying back to the mansion and is shot down, but Magneto saves them from crashing. And I have a question of, how did he know where they were? I mean, I guess maybe they were just heading back to the mansion and he was close to the mansion, but I didn't know they were that close. Maybe they were. It just seemed like that is a great spot to be, like perfect spot to be, and I don't know how you did it.
But not only did he know where they would be, he knew where they would crash.
Too. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Because he crashed right in his face.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he could have manipulated a little, but I was just curious. Like, how did you do that? But who knows? It doesn't matter anyways. Yeah. Back to the nitpicking. Sometimes we have to.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I also think it... Nightcrawler, when they're camping out and Nightcrawler's like swooning over Mystique, it always kind of skeeved me out as a fan of the animated series because that's his mom.
Yeah.
So, and the whole Rogue relationship with her as well. Right. Like, I missed that from the animated series a lot too. It's like they really missed some opportunities to do some cool stuff and have Mystique be a character in those movies.
Yeah.
Not just a hot chick in blue paint.
Yeah, I agree with that. There again, it's a missed opportunity that you could have, I mean, because they clearly, they liked her enough to have her in a lot of scenes and to try to, you know, to really use her well in terms of furthering plot. But they refused to kind of develop anything for her, really. They just didn't. And yeah, that relationship of mother-daughter, I mean, that is like, that would have been, you could have sprung that in the third film. And that would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just that line that she says to Nightcrawler, because he's like, you know, you can look however you want. Why don't you just do that all the time?
Yeah.
And she just says, I just wish I didn't have to. Like, that's a great line that totally springs into X3, but it doesn't matter. In X3, she immediately becomes depowered, and then we don't really see her the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's I know. It's just like they use her for a tool, really. Like that's all she gets is to be used as a tool to disguise as one person or another and just do this one task. And yeah, she doesn't get any depth, like you said. So
it's like that character you have to switch on to in a video game just to push the one button. Then you switch back to the normal character to do the rest of the mission.
Yeah, kind of. All right, so after Magneto saves everyone, he tells them that, he tells them pretty much the plan, that Stryker's son, Jason, is a mutant who has mind control powers, and Stryker is trying to use him to force Xavier to use the second Cerebro, to pretty much kill every mutant on the planet. Which, I think they did a good job of, yes, definitely, but, you know, if we didn't get the scenes with Magneto and the whole serum thing, like, you'd be, wonder how does he know any of this stuff? But, so I mean, I like that they sprinkled that stuff in, where this is it answered a lot of questions. And actually, speaking of one, I think it's further on, but a scene I do love is when you see the female Wolverine,
Lady Deathstrike.
What her name is? Yes. When you see her kind of coming back out of it, I at first I was thinking that it was Xavier being able to control her, but not Stryker, but and once I found out what was really going on, it was her coming out of this daze. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Like, yeah, just I don't know. It just really stuck out to me, that scene that I love, because they focus on her kind of where she's just like looking around like where am I? What is going on here? Yeah. And he notices it and just like, oh, I got to get her back under my control. Which I just it was a great scene. It was a clever idea the way they used the serum stuff.
Yeah, I liked it too. I thought it plays well. For Joe to start. It does. It plays well, and it brings up some ethical concerns or interests about using, you know, the ends justifying the means. Using whatever you can, including human beings or other, you know, characters, mutants, to get that end result that you want, and whether or not that there is something, you know, good in that. Is it okay to do that? Is it not okay to do that? I mean, clearly it's not okay, but it does bring up just at least that interesting point of, you understand why you're just going to use these people, these mutants, to just do what you need to get done. And that's it. Reduces them.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. You made me think that he probably justifies it to himself as he only uses it on other mutants. Like, he doesn't use it on a human. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't do that. But on a mutant, who cares? You know, they're less than. So he'll use it on them, which I think probably, to him, is making it okay to do.
Well, and also it gives... I love the way they set up his sort of backstory. I don't know if it's what it is from the books. I don't think it is. But the idea of his son, you know, tormenting him and his wife to the point where his wife took her own life and all that stuff.
Right.
Like, it's like, oh, I get that. I get why he has that hatred. It's like in Spider-Man the Animated Series where they show Jameson's wife being killed by a masked mugger, and that's why he doesn't trust these heroes in masks.
Right.
Like, if you have nothing to hide, show your face.
Right.
If you're not, you know, if you're a mutant, then you're just here to make us, to hurt us, and to make us do what you want us to do. And that's not cool.
Yeah. Well, it's not. So you're right.
It's not cool. But it gives him that cool, you know, that interesting, like, he's not just a cackling mad scientist going, here, I'm going to get these mutants. Right. Like, it's, oh, well, he doesn't want, I mean, it's still misguided in that not all mutants are bad, but, you know, he doesn't want to see the same thing. It scared him so much what his son could do. Plus, he's a little vindictive and crazy anyway, given everything he did to Wolverine in the past, that, like, he's okay using them to destroy them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we're speaking of, that's kind of the next scene, is Magneto telling Wolverine that Stryker was the one that pretty much made him who he is, with the adamantium skeleton and the amnesia and all that stuff. So that was, I mean, it was good. It got Wolverine kind of his answers, and it moves on this story, and it so it helps. It's still interesting why Professor didn't want to just tell him, but I think he just wanted him to find out kind of on his own pace.
So yeah. And again, it's another missed opportunity from the animated series of just the depth in Weapon X that they could have gone through. Even if you don't have the deep relationship between Wolverine and Sabretooth that you even get in X-Men Origins, you can at least show, like, they worked together.
Yes.
Like, they did have something. I think Lady Deathstrike was part of that program, too. Like, you know, you could have shown just how big a deal Weapon X actually is. I think I said this in our first X-Men episode. So Wolverine is Weapon X, which is number 10. Captain America is Weapon 1. And it all stems from that same program.
Right, okay.
I didn't actually know that.
From the comics. Yeah.
That's very cool.
So, yeah, and I don't know everything about it, but if the Stryker and his group, because it's all part of the government, it just sort of, not necessarily like Hydra, but it was kind of like a branch off of that same kind of scientific research that eventually, excuse me, led to Wolverine.
So are all the X-Force, you know, wait, was that what was the name that they called? He was a part of a group, right, Wolverine? Not X-Factor, or was it?
I don't remember. There's so many X's.
Yeah, were they a part? So they were a part of that program as well then, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hmm. Yeah, I have to go back and look it up again. I don't remember.
Yeah. Very cool. All right, so next we got Gene reads Nightcrawler's mind and figures out Stryker used him and is at Alkali Lake underground. Twist. Right there the whole time, Logan, dang it.
He should have sniffed a little harder. He could have smelled them under under the ground.
Right? Should have followed that wolf a little further. Probably shown him, hey.
Right?
They're down here, by the way.
That's
yeah, it's probably...
The door is over here, around here, across this mountain. Yeah, you're real close, bud.
Wolf
just
turned
keep...
around and just, like, yeah. Where is this guy?
Well, he left. I told him to follow me.
Dude. Oh, man.
He must only talk to Wolverines, not to
that's
not to
it,
wolves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, only he was a Wolverine, am I right?
Wow. Oh, sorry. Gross.
Sorry.
Leave it in. Let's
get I think I will. Oh, dang it. So we got a very cool Mystique scene. So we got Mystique disguised as Logan, which is smart. Like, it was smart that in order to get in, nothing will happen to Logan. He won't let anything happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was smart to have Mystique do it. It was just, I mean, it was clever writing, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they gave her the scenes, like, she's amazing in this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and it was awesome to see. Again, I wish she had more
taking
dialogue.
Out all the guards.
Yeah. Just makes it in, makes it easy, and disguises a Stryker, and just all of that stuff was great. Like, I just, like you were saying.
She just needs to talk as herself more.
Yeah. Give her more, because she's great.
You know, I didn't think about this until just now, but we were talking about how great that opening scene was, right, in the film with Nightcrawler. But you can make the argument that every scene that she's in, quite honestly, in this trilogy, is pretty darn close to, I mean, when she's moving around, is pretty darn close to being just as energetic and just as interesting as that opening sequence. Like, they really could have, and they should have done more with her, because I just think Rebecca Romijn just deserved it, quite honestly, for what she went through to do this.
Yeah.
And she earned it on the screen. She earned it the right way. She was incredibly charismatic. Incredibly, you know, good in terms of her movement sequences and everything like that. So, yeah, that was a lost opportunity right there.
Yeah.
Well, not to keep pointing out failings of the franchise or anything, but the character that we haven't spoken of once is played by one of the most famous actors in the franchise, which is Halle Berry as Storm.
Yes.
Who gets more to do in this one than the last one.
I know.
But
yeah.
Still not much.
No.
Although they still have her where she just, whenever she uses her powers, and she just does that thing where she just stands still and just stares.
Completely
You're
still.
Like, come on, just throw a lightning bolt or something. Come on. What are you doing? Why are you, it's taking you like 10 minutes to get going. Like, come on.
Yeah, and then the wind has to build up.
Yeah. She's just like sitting there just like hyping herself up.
I know.
Okay, here
and
we
everyone,
go.
You think about just as a kid, you get away with that. You know, you look at the screen and you're just, you know, in that. But as like when you think rationally about it as an adult, you're just thinking, why is everyone standing there? Just do something.
And everyone's just kind of looking over at her like, what you doing?
Hey, let's wait. She's doing something.
This is going to be really cool, guys. Just wait for it.
Oh, man.
I'd love to have people just walking around in the background, like looking over at her like, what's she doing?
Hey.
That's weird.
Yeah, or her just standing there, like, just you know, like, just zoning out or something. Yeah. And they're, like, staring at her. She's like, oh, no, I'm not doing anything. Sorry, I just kind of lost focus.
It's like,
oh,
it's morning face.
Stuff,
in the morning, she's just waiting for, like, a Pop-Tart to come up, and she's staring at the toaster. And people are like, whoa, she's going to do something.
Yeah, looking out the windows, like, what's she doing? What's going on?
Nothing?
Oh, man. Oh. That would be great. Oh, man. Okay. So then we get Nightcrawler and Storm saving the kids. Great. We get Jean fighting the mind-controlled Cyclops. And their fight ends up damaging the dam. I don't know if they
damn.
Get... Great. And then we get Logan fights and kills Yuriko. So That was
good. That was a cool fight.
Yes.
It was a brutal fight.
I agree. That was good.
Yes.
I wish he hadn't killed her. Like, even as a little kid seeing that movie, I was like, oh, you killed her. Like, you could have brought her back.
I know.
But it was pretty brutal to just, like, stick her with the adamantium injector and just, like, suffocate her from the inside out. That's pretty fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thud that her head makes when it hits the bottom.
Tink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Tink more than thud. Yeah. And you're right, because, I mean, do we know if she was evil or not, or was she just mind-controlled? I mean, we know she was mind-controlled, but...
It's the Winter Soldier of it all. Like, is it? Doesn't matter. It's fine.
I guess,
yeah. It doesn't matter. She's dead now, so she was probably evil. See those nails? That's an evil person's nails.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and they have a history, too. Yep. I mean, she is a slightly better used version of Sabretooth. Because weren't they a couple?
She was a love interest when he was in Japan, right? And Fox,
I think so.
Fox was his love interest with X-Factor, I think, when they were doing the... Mm-hmm.
Not the studio Fox. No one loves Fox.
No. Yeah. But yeah. So there is definitely history there. Again, missed opportunity. But like you keep saying, and you're right, they weren't really thinking in terms of a universe. You know, they really weren't, or maybe they would have made these choices, actually. I thought the actress, too, was good, you know? Like, again, good presence.
Well, I mean, it's Kelly Hu, I think, is who it is?
I'm not sure.
Pretty sure it was Kelly Hu. I mean, she's a big deal-ish name. I mean, it's not like, she's not a huge name, and I don't know what she's done lately, but at the time, she was kind of an up-and-coming. It seemed like a good get when they cast her. It was like, oh, shit, well, that's some notoriety again. Right. But as with Halle Berry, she doesn't even talk.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Yeah. She might have a line or two. Maybe two.
I don't think so.
I don't think she talks at all. Yeah, I agree. Really? I don't remember. Yeah.
She does say one. She says something to the garbage cleaner that is actually Mystique.
Oh.
Really? Mm.
I think that's it. She's like, what are you doing in here? You're not supposed to be in here. And yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I think that might be it. It's like you could have cut that and it would have, yeah. She could have just turned around and probably and just say garbage and we would have understand what the problem was. But yeah.
She was menacing. Like, she looked like someone you wouldn't want to screw with. So that was good.
Yeah. Cracking her metal knuckles all the time. And
Yeah. Which doesn't make sense, but it's fine.
No, it doesn't. Like, but it's
she
okay.
has metal arthritis. Do the joints start to, like, bind together, but then she, like, stops it? Is that?
Yeah, obviously.
Okay. That's a condition you'd think they would have worked out by the time they got to
her. But
they're working on it.
Okay. Maybe the next model.
Yeah. Next, we have Magneto stops Cerebro, but uses Mystique to impersonate Stryker to command Jason to have Xavier redirect his powers on humans.
Dick.
A lot of jumping hoops there.
When you say it that way, it doesn't sound that good.
I know. I was writing it, and I was like, am I going to be able to make sense of this?
Stacy told Becky, told Nancy, told me that he totally likes you.
Wait, who said what? Oh, man. But, I mean, that is how it worked out.
It is a cool scene, though, and it's creepy as shit. Like, the whole thing with Jason, like, he's kind of based on Legion, I think.
Okay.
But it's a cool character that they made for the movie. And the little girl that he, you know, makes himself up to look like in Xavier's eyes, which I think is almost just as creepy, if not creepier, than actual Jason. It's an awesome scene, and it's classic Magneto of like, well, they tried to do this to us, screw those guys, and forcing Xavier to do it to them is pretty awesome.
And
Storm does the one cool thing she does in the franchise when she freezes the shit out of Jason.
Yeah.
That's an awesome scene.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
That's the one cool time thing. I was like, Storm is cool.
Finally, yeah.
She did cool things with the jet fight. I will say that. It was cool to see all those storms, and I think you could have just done better at it, but it was still cool.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So then Magneto and Mystique use Stryker's helicopter to escape, accompanied by Pyro, who has been swayed by Magneto's views. not a big
surprise. I like his arc in this.
Yeah. But it's also not that surprising. Like he just seems like he's kind of a dickhead for them.
Yeah, there's a great subtle scene when Pyro turns to Magneto and says, they say you're the bad guy. And Magneto turns to him and says, is that what they say?
Yeah.
And I love that scene because it shows that experience that Magneto has to see a young man and to know I don't have to say anything here, really. I just have to show him that I'm listening and that I'm open to hearing what you have to say. Like he can read that kind of rage. You know, he's flipping the lighter, all that stuff, showing the that kind of anxiousness that he has about the whole situation. I mean, granted, I wish they would have slow played that a little bit more. Like he just seems kind of a jerk. I don't know, from beginning to end. So you're kind of, again, it's that idea of how much growth are you going to put into these characters? That was another character that you could have put a lot more growth into because that scene is great the way it is. Just that little exchange is perfect.
They could have slow burned it and had him turn in X3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When things are really heating up and the cure's coming out, he'd be like, no, mutant and proud, and I'm going with this guy.
Yeah.
That's what they should have done. Otherwise, it was just like you said, like, yeah, of course he's going to turn. He's the creepy douchebag with the slick back hair that's going after the same girl as Iceman.
Yeah.
And we know that they're supposed to be together for some reason. Yeah. So... there you go, because he was nice to her in the first movie, so they should be a couple, so it's fine.
He made a flower for her?
Yeah, Justin? That's right.
True. Hello. Nice flower. I do like that the way that Magneto talks to Pyro and the idea of, like, I had the scene in my head and then I completely forgot. He was talking about the extraordinary gift that he has and shit, and it's so much of what Fassbender did when he played Magneto, talking to Mystique about, like, these aren't curses, they're gifts, and, you know, the classic perfection meme with Mystique that's, you know, used to death, but that scene is awesome.
Yeah,
I can't wait for us to talk First Class, because that movie's just fantastic, but, like, it was that kind of showing of who Magneto actually is, instead of kind of the cackling villain he was in the first movie. Like, no, he respects mutants to the point where he feels they're superior and should be treated as such.
Yeah, and his power, in when Magneto is at his best or is most interesting to me, his powers are secondary to the idea that he just has such a world of experience. He just knows humanity so well that he knows that the greatest weapon that he has is his truth. You have these gifts. You are clearly more powerful than everyone else, than all these other humans.
Yeah.
There is no reason why you should not be using those advantages, because guess what? Humans use their advantages all the time. This is just another evolution of an advantage. And that level of, it reminds me of in Diablo 3, now of course I'm going to forget the character's name, but he has this fantastic line in about, I think it's like the fourth act, where he just says, I find it far more menacing or troubling to just tell people the truth. The truth is far more like troubling than any lie that I could come up with. And that makes me think of Magneto always, that idea of he's not really a liar. Like, he's not a liar.
Huh.
He just says,
no, this he's is twisting the truth. Things in his perspective,
right?
But he's not wrong.
If they wanted to, could they all band together and just take over the world? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
quite
a fact.
Quite easily, in fact.
Yeah.
Should they? Probably not.
Right.
But they could.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, that's what it's so great, and I'm glad that they did focus on that in the First Classiverse, is that relationship between Xavier and Eric, because they are the same, they're two sides of the same coin.
Right.
They diverge on the, how far do we really take this? Because, I mean, Xavier's doing the exact same thing. He's got a group of mutants training them up to band together. They're just helping instead of overthrowing.
Right.
Like, Yeah. I mean, Magneto was even taught at Xavier's school when Xavier died one of the 50 times in the books. Like,
yeah.
And this, but I do want to talk about how great Alan Cumming is as Nightcrawler.
He was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a character with surprising depth that I was crushed didn't come back in X3.
Yes. I know.
The tattoos he gave himself and just all of it. I just loved everything they did with him.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I'm glad that they gave him a little history to him, a little backstory, a reason for why he does what he does. And I mean, his powers are just awesome. You're right. I wanted to see more of him so bad, but nope.
Yeah.
Too cool.
Yeah. We have too many blue people in this movie. We need to cut one out to bring one in.
We're out of paint.
Probably is what it was.
We have no more paint in the budget.
There you go.
That's it.
Yep. The suits were like, you gotta lower that budget.
Why are you spending
down
this much on blue paint? I don't. Just make a different character.
Yeah. Jeez, I didn't even
bring back
of that.
Toad. At least he was green.
Toad. Oh.
Oh, man.
Oh,
but speaking of Nightcrawler, he teleports Storm into Cerebro for Justin's favorite scene, where she creates a snowstorm to break Jason's concentration and free
and
Xavier
sings,
from
"Do you
want to
build a snowman?"
Oh man, you're terrible. So they finally they make it out of this tunnel. As they try to escape, the X-Wing loses all power and struggles to take flight as the flood water rushes towards them. What are
Spoilers.
They going to do? I know. So we get Jean. She sneaks off the jet and holds back the water as it rises. And she rises the jet above it as flames erupt from her body until she lets go and allows the flood to crash upon her and presumably kills her.
Or does it?
We're not there yet. We got one more sentence before that.
Okay.
So the X-Men give Stryker's files to the president, and Xavier warns him that humans and mutants must work together to build peace. Will they? I don't know. But meanwhile, a phoenix-like shape rises from the flooded Alkali Lake. What does this mean? It was very cool. It was in theater seeing that. Yeah, not much. No, it was great in the scene. Like I remember that. I was so excited. Like, oh my gosh, yes! Like
they're doing Phoenix.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was like, this is so cool. Like, it's so cool. It's just subtly there. And if you know, like it's one of those things where if you know, and if not, you're interested. But yeah, it was just, I thought it was very clever, very cool.
Yeah, as a young comic nerd, that was one of my first like aha moments of like, I know something the audience doesn't know, and I feel great about it because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
And then X3 came out, and I didn't feel so good about being a nerd. It's like, it's Phoenix, but this isn't it. This isn't it. Watch the cartoon. That's what it is. Yeah. It's different.
Yeah, no, it just made you look like a fool, right? When you told people about the exciting thing that was coming, it just made you look like, people just looked at you like, that wasn't cool. And you're like, I know.
They start blaming
you.
Sad about it too. You're right.
You told us it was going to be cool. Yeah. It should have been. It just wasn't.
This is your fault. To be.
I did this. I remember doing that with Ant-Man.
Oh.
Where, when that was coming out and everyone was coming up to me going, really, Ant-Man?
Yeah.
I was like, I know, but just watch it. Like, it's going to be so cool. It's going to look so great. And thankfully, that was good.
Yes.
X3. But, yeah. I also always wondered, like, Nightcrawler was having trouble just getting, like, one person through a door. And then by the end of the movie, he's able to get the entire cast into the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Like, that's quite the power boost.
It's Rush at the end. Yeah.
I do like the exchange with Nightcrawler and the president where he's waving at him like, hi. Yeah.
Hey,
that's cool.
Remember me? Well, you know, you get some training and from Professor Xavier and you can do all kinds of things.
I feel like that would have sent the wrong message, though. Like, he'd remember that guy. Like, why would he listen to Xavier if the guy who tried to assassinate him at the beginning of the movie is sitting right over there?
Because he showed him the files of, the serum.
Yeah.
And all
no, but that's a good. Yeah, that's a good point. Again,
it is a good point.
Like, he should have stayed out in the hall.
He should have. Yeah. Yeah.
I know you want to. We need your help to get into the room. We're gonna have this big dramatic thing. Storm's gonna conjure up a single lightning bolt, so we need like 5 minutes for that. And then, get us all in here, and then get the fuck out. Because if he sees you, he's not gonna listen to me.
Right. Yeah. Oh man. But yes, that's
or
what
it
we
was
got
a stop time thing. Xavier stopped time. Then yes. He said, okay, everybody come in, come in, come in.
Yeah.
And then they all stood cool. And then he started time again. Then he stopped time again. So, okay, let's get the fuck out. Yeah. Go, go, go. We gotta go.
Well, wait, can I ask a stupid question that I don't remember? What,
sure.
Yeah. What was... Wait, now that I'm thinking about it, why couldn't Xavier help Jean again? When she's holding back the...
He was a little sleepy, kind of.
Was that it?
It was... I mean, he had just gotten taken off of the Striker helmet
right,
thing, so he was
right,
a little
right.
doped up from that, and they were lugging him around because he didn't have his chair.
Right.
And I think he was just still woozy from that whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, something about that last scene, though. I don't know.
I guess it could.
Well, and then she spoke to him, spoke to Scott through Xavier, which was creepy when he's talking all lovingly. And
that's what I wrote. That's what I said.
Like,
It was weird.
I mean, it's Patrick Stewart, so he sells it, but it's like, you're an old man talking to me like this. 20-something-year-old woman, like, as you're my lover, like, this is
You would think
awkward.
That he would just break it anyway and just say, could you back up? Could you back up a little bit? Yeah. Like, you're a bit of a close talker here. Come on, back
that
up.
Would have been, you know, that would have been funny if he'd be like, hold on, just, I know what I'm doing, but could you just...
Scott, shut up. Yeah.
He comes in with those lips.
And here's a mint.
Should we kiss?
They kiss, and then he's like, oh, I broke, you know, telepathy with her like 5 minutes ago. Yeah. Like,
but thank you.
Yeah, so she's been gone for a while now, but thank you, yeah. This is lovely.
She's been dead for 10 minutes. Like, this is... Yeah.
This is a little awkward on my part. I should have said something sooner.
They all knew. All of them behind you, they knew. They just
and everyone's
stood there.
Just in the back of the plane going...
You just seem like you really needed this.
I was going to stop you, but you were in the moment, and it's just...
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm glad you got to say goodbye. Yeah. She didn't hear it. She was dead, but I... Yeah.
That was good.
Jeez.
Oh, what a good way to end it. So, yes, that was X2. X-Men United 2.
Woot.
But we got a little bit of fun facts here for you.
Sure.
So we're not going to leave you like that. Do you want to go first, Justin, or second?
I'll go first.
You did catch it. You always catch it. I can't. I hate you.
Most of the extras playing frozen people were actually mimes who are used to not moving. Interesting.
Yes. Used to. Not used to.
They're used to. They're used to.
Yeah. I think you have to.
I know I said it
ways.
Weird. I understand.
You did.
Let's move Rhymes on. Are just Only used I can call to not on. Move. I can call out you for saying things
no.
wrong. You can't do it to me. I'm all sorry. Right.
Sorry. During filming, Hugh Jackman's sister visited the set. As a joke, she was made up in Jackman's full Wolverine costume and makeup and walked around the set. Apparently, she was very convincing as Jackman. Bryan Singer was not aware that it was not Jackman in the Wolverine costume and commented on her work during shooting that he was acting very strangely today. So I don't know what she looks like, but this kind of feels like...
That
not
seems mean.
Nice. Yeah.
He's
I don't
huge.
Know how much makeup
in this
right.
film.
Yeah.
Like, he's even bigger than the first one. He's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I must add the jacket.
Like, I've never
on
seen
something.
I've never seen pictures of his sister, but
She sounds
at like around yeah. Yeah. At around 42 minutes, the ice wall separating Wolverine and Stryker in their reunion in the mansion battle was real ice and weighed 3,500 pounds.
Yeah.
And was very cold. Because that's a lot of ice.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was real, so I had to put it in.
That is cool.
Professor Xavier's wheelchair from X-Men 2000 was bought by a lawyer who also worked for the same law firm as Sir Patrick Stewart's attorney. When production began, the studio realized they had no chair anymore, so the lawyer rented it back to the studio. As Stewart said in an interview, for a significant sum.
What a dick.
Wow.
I mean, it's a studio. Who cares? Make them pay. But also, just make another one.
Yeah, I guess. That too. There's so many things. Like, just let him borrow the fucking chair.
Yeah.
Or make another chair. This is the blue paint thing. Like, just splurge on the third can of blue paint and bring Beast into this movie.
Yeah. Take the
Nightcrawler into the next one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the exterior shots of the Xavier Mansion were recycled from the first movie because there was no budget for them. What?
Too much money on blue paint. We've discussed this.
Wow.
At around 26 minutes, the German phrases that Nightcrawler shouts to Storm and Jean in the Boston Church are, I'm not even going to attempt to say this in German. It is written, but they translate to, get out, I am a minion of the devil, I am the spawn of evil. Which is interesting, yeah. So he probably uses that often to just get people to leave me alone, you know, don't look at me kind of a thing. So,
yeah.
Interesting.
Hmm. Well, and that's, it's one of the things I love about their kind of brief glimpse into his past. Like, he originally was, like, left at a circus, and he was their sideshow demon. And they have him, like, he references being part of the circus, and there's a poster on his wall of it, you know, when he was doing that. Like, that's a really cool, like, they did that nugget. Why can't you do the other ones?
That is cool.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Last one here. On The Tonight Show with Jay Leno from 1992, Hugh Jackman related a story about something that happened during the filming of the Weapon X flashback scene. Why did it say Jay Leno 1992? That doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
Because it would have been, that was the past. So maybe before he filmed it. Maybe it meant, 2002?
Yeah.
That's what that should have been?
Yeah, maybe. I just copy and paste it. All right.
On The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, date omitted, Hugh Jackman related a story about something that happened during the filming of the Weapon X flashback scene. While he was filming the corridor run in which he is nude and backlit, he turned the corner and saw the female cast members and also James Marsden's mother waiting for him, hooting and waving dollar bills. Jesus.
So
I don't think that'd fly today.
Yeah, no, that was actually, as you were reading it, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, that will not go over well.
No. Yeah. No.
Oh, man.
Especially if it was reversed.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I'm sure they had a good time, though.
Yeah.
But there we go. That is X-Men 2, X-Men United, X2, X United.
X all of the X's.
X squared.
There
you go. X squared.
Solve for X.
For all you nerds. X squared.
So that was fun. Dr. Joe, I appreciate you jumping on, man. This was a lot of fun.
It was a blast, guys. Love it.
Yeah.
And you'll be back for Spider-Man 2, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I know that was one that you lobbied for.
We didn't have
to lure you back with the promise of cookies like we did with this one.
I'll take cookies and pizza as payment always.
Okay. Yes. Me too, please.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So our next episode is going to be a review on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So tune in next week for that.
Our tickets?
Yes, we did get our tickets. I'm very excited for this. People are trying to put trailers everywhere I go now, and I'm trying to avoid all of them. But it's very difficult.
It's getting pretty solid reviews, though. I haven't looked at anything specific. I haven't seen what Rotten Tomatoes is lying about this time. But I'm excited for this one.
I'm excited, too. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think sad from some of the stuff I've heard. But
yeah,
tune in next episode. But until then, if you want to reach out with any questions, comments, anything like that, please do. Go to our website, wearemarvelpod.com. We are on social media, wearemarvelpod. Or email us, wearemarvelpod@gmail.com. And on the website, we got a link to our merchandise store. Joe, where do they reach you? I'll have it in the notes, but if you want to say where else, let us know.
You can head over to theneutralgroundpodcast.com to check out some latest episodes that I've done on the podcast and learn more about, you know, what we're doing.
Yes. Awesome. Again, thank you for joining us. This is a lot of fun always when you get on. So we will have him at least back once. We'll try and convince him for more.
See if he's sick of us by then.
Yeah.
Pizza.
That's why we spread these out. You'll get sick of us, and then you'll forget how you didn't like us, and you'll come back, and it'll just be recurring forever.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. But yes, thank you again for joining us, and thank you, everyone, for listening. But until next time, I've been Jeremy.
And I've been Justin.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.